Can we talk a little bit about what you're doing to get ready for the Contentment Challenge?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. You don't seem excited about that.
No, I mean, I haven't done anything yet. I've been worrying. Okay. I bought a bag I didn't need. I know.
Just under the... Just
flying under the radar.
There you go. No. Under the... Like, you don't jump the gun. You're not flying under the radar.
Ahead of the curve?
Sure.
I don't
Before
know.
Before the gun shoots at the beginning of the race?
Oh, like I started too soon. Nope. We are mental giants. This is Emily Thomas, and you're listening to the Struggle Well Project podcast. Do I say podcast after that? This is also weird. Hey ladies, welcome back. We are officially starting again. The encore episodes of July are behind us. I took my break in July like my friend suggested. During that time, I got bit by something, thought I had Lyme's disease or West Nile, got incredibly sick, got better. Our dog bit a bunch of people. We had to surrender it to the shelter. Everybody was sad. We got a new puppy. Now there's pee everywhere I step. We were gonna move, so I packed up the whole house by myself because my husband just had shoulder surgery, so he's only got the one arm that works. And then just kidding, we're not moving, and so I'm currently unpacking. And now I have one of those lovely things called a summer cold. So in short, I'm really rested and ready to go. But really though, taking the break helped my heart to be refreshed and ready to keep going. Sometimes you just need to take a step back to realize how much you love something. So now you are listening to the Struggle Well Project podcast. I don't know if I'm going to say podcast after that. It's obviously a podcast. You're listening to it in a podcast app. Do I say the podcast after project? The two P's next to each other? I don't love it. So anyway, I'm just giving you a peek into my crazy. This is what's going on. I don't have a boss telling me what to do. So I gotta make this up, and I never really know what's happening. If you're sad about losing the mom word, we're still gonna talk about motherhood stuff. I mean, I can't not. I got kids. But we're gonna try to focus on a bunch of other parts of being a woman. What's that like? I mean, we know what it's like, but how do we do a better job in all the ways? So this is episode 146, and my guest is Kelly Seitz. She's got a super fascinating job, and it changes the way she lives her daily life. Her stories are fantastic, and I can't wait to share it with you. But before we get started, I wanted to tell you that at the top of the show, you heard a little snippet of the Struggling Sisters show. What that is me and my sister Katie release additional content. We're still kind of working out what that looks like, but since she's now on the Struggle Well Project team, she is cooking up a bunch of fun additional content for Patreon people. So if you want to be one of our exclusive Patreon people, go to patreon.com/strugglewellproject. You can start listening to all the Struggling Sisters episodes we've released up to this point, and you're going to get some extra stuff that is coming to all the Patreon ladies. And my brother, he's in there too. We just released last week a Struggling Sisters where we talked about American history and we shared everything we knew. We also shared a lot of things that were not actual facts that we thought were facts, and we really embarrassed ourselves. I had a Canadian listener write me, so sweet, and she said, "You guys, I know more about American history than you do." So bad. Anyway, but we learned a lot. So if you want to feel better about your American history knowledge, head over there and check that out. Okay, so let's move on to the review of the week. Why does this matter? Your reviews let other people know that this show is actually valuable. So do me a great favor, leave your review if you haven't yet. It really helps the show out. So today I want to highlight DanceMom428. She says, "I feel like I've crawled out from under a rock. Your podcast gets me through my workday. I'm sure my coworkers want me to be checked into an asylum due to my laughing and crying. I feel like my relationship with the Lord is stronger after hearing your interviews with so many inspiring moms. Thank you." Listen, Dance Mom, thank you for your review. And I love hearing that listening to the show makes you look like you're crazy at work. That really makes me smile. But also you might want to tell them that you're not, so you can keep your job. Okay, so like I said, this week I'm talking to Kelly Seitz. Her job is fascinating. I tried to see if I could maybe start doing this job, and my husband said, "No way, Jose," but I did try. So let's get started. Hey, Kelly, how are you this morning?
Hi, Emily. Good morning.
Hey, so will you tell us a little bit about who you are? You have such an interesting job, but I want to hear about your family.
Yeah, so I've been married to my husband, Chuck, for almost 25 years. In September, it'll be 25 years. Okay. And we have twins, a boy and a girl. They will be 20 on July 4th.
Okay. Wow. So 4th of July.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. Two birthdays and a holiday.
They think it's all about them.
Of course. Well, my birthday is New Year's Eve. So I also agree. I thought it was all about me too.
Yeah.
Okay. So twins, what would you tell a mom of twins that would be helpful to her?
I think what really helped me back in when they were newborn baby stage was get them on the same schedule. It really is possible. It helped me so much. So one of the books that I read about twins said the best sleeper and the best eater kind of make the other one be on that schedule. So whenever it was my daughter, in this case, I have a boy and a girl, and my daughter was a great sleeper and a great eater. So when she woke up to eat, then my son got woken up to eat. And when she went down for a nap, he went down for a nap. And literally within about a month, they were on the exact same schedule.
Okay. And then you've actually got little pockets of life where you can do what you need to do.
Yeah. You have like a little bit of time to run around and get organized for when they wake up again.
There you go. Okay. All right. So you are a nurse.
Yes.
And you, how old were you when you became a nurse?
Ooh.
Was it your first job?
No, I did other things. So I went to nursing school a teeny bit later. So I finally graduated when I was, I think, 31.
Okay. And then did you immediately go into, what was your first nursing job?
Yeah, I didn't even know disaster response nursing was a thing, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
So I didn't know. So I worked at a hospital. I worked in intensive care.
Okay.
Up until when I had my kids, and then I kind of worked per diem after they were born.
Okay. So tell us what you do now, and how did you even get into that?
Yeah. So I am an international disaster response nurse. I've been doing that since 2010, and I work with Samaritan's Purse.
Okay.
So I didn't even know it was a thing, to make a long story short. 2009, I started praying because I was feeling kind of complacent and comfy in my life. Mm-hmm. And I would pray all the time in the parking garage before I went into the hospital for my shift. You know, God, use me how you want in this place. And there's always lots of opportunities, of course, in that field. So I prayed and said, God, however you want to use my nursing skills, whatever way, just lead me to that. So I didn't know how he would answer that. So all of 2009, I waited and waited and waited and prayed. And in 2010, the Haiti earthquake hit.
Okay.
And I was just watching the coverage and they were asking for help. So I knew of Samaritan's Purse. So I went on their website and sure enough, they were looking for nurses to go and help. So I signed up thinking it would be a one-shot deal. Mm-hmm. But it ended up being, here I am 8 years later, and I've been on 13 deployments.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so what does that look like? Is it actually a job?
So I'm a contract employee, so okay. I just am home living my life, doing my thing, and always stay on top of things because I never know when something's going to happen. So we deploy to tsunamis, hurricanes, earthquakes, outbreaks such as cholera, Ebola, diphtheria, war, refugee camp things. So whenever there's something, they'll call me and say, hey, can you leave this afternoon or can you leave tomorrow for a month? And I go and I deploy and I come back.
Okay, so for a month.
Yes.
Whoa. Okay, so how do you even plan anything?
It's very hard. So I am careful with what I say yes to. It's important to me to be involved in my church. I'm always the Vacation Bible School Bible teacher.
Okay.
So I always just let them know you have to have a backup plan.
Okay.
So they'll always have kind of someone on standby. And that actually did happen the year I got deployed to Liberia for Ebola. I was on day two of Vacation Bible School. And
Oh my gosh. So
I was there 1 minute and the next day I'm gone. Everyone thinks I'm raptured all the time. Oh my goodness. She was just here. Where'd she go? But I just have a backup plan and I try to stay on top of everything. I don't procrastinate Christmas shopping or birthday shopping or anything because this year I left for Bangladesh at Christmas. I missed Christmas. So thank God I was organized and had all my shopping already done.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm sure you get all these basic questions all the time, but like, is it worth missing Christmas? I know that's kind of a selfish question, but just curious.
Yeah, that's a great question. I know people would wonder that, but there was a very large diphtheria outbreak in a refugee camp. And my family talked, and we can have Christmas all the time. Christmas is so important to me. My family is my priority, but we know that sometimes people need help. And so we were comfortable and I was fine. I mean, this is the kind of work when there's an outbreak or a tsunami or earthquake, they need help. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was worth it. My family was great about it. I was great about it. Of course I miss them, but what I was going to do was really, really important.
And they are like on board with that too?
100%.
Okay. Because I think it might be different if they were not.
Yeah, I don't think you could do it. I don't think it would be fair to your family. Mm-hmm. They know that I miss things sometimes. I've missed Thanksgiving. I miss their 16th birthday. I was in an Ebola unit on their birthday. Mm-hmm. But for the rest of the times, I'm here. Mm-hmm. And that's really the key. My thing is I'm super intentional and plugged in to my husband and kids when I am home, kind of filling up their bank accounts so that when I leave, it's not going to deplete the whole thing and turn us upside down.
I think, yeah, you're right. You'd have to be really present and really intentional all the time. Where I think some of the rest of us kind of coast going, you know, there's always going to be tomorrow, which we know we're not promised that, but we kind of live like we are.
That's exactly what it's done for us and for our family. And it makes me really, really appreciate so many things. It's totally changed my life and my perspective and our family's perspective.
Okay, so here's my question. Have you guys ordered your free 11x14 canvas from Canvas People yet? Well, I actually know several of you have because I've seen them hanging in your houses. Way to go, guys. But the rest of you, what are you waiting for? Free home decor. Nobody can argue with you about buying it because you didn't buy it. I don't know about you, but I took some amazing pictures of my kids this summer. They're getting older and harder to photograph because they have questions like, who are you sending this to? But when I got past all the questions, I managed to get some really good photos and I want them to be on my walls. Canvas People changes your pictures on your phone into easy to hang, amazing looking home decor. And like I said before, they are going to give today's listeners an 11x14 canvas, a $69.99 value for free. That's right, free. All you have to do is pay shipping. Visit canvaspeople.com, upload your photo, and enter the code MSW. So to get your own 11x14 canvas, visit canvaspeople.com and use my special code MSW. That's MSW.
How do you communicate like what you see and why it's important to your kids? I know when my husband goes out of town for like work, I'm pretty sure he's on vacation, and I know he's not because he tells me he's not, but I'm like, but you went on a plane and you stayed in a hotel, and I know you went out to a nice steak dinner. So anyway, and I know you're not going to steak dinners, but how do you communicate the gravity of what you're doing?
Usually if we have time, we don't always because I leave so quickly, but I'll set them up for where I'm going, what we're doing. We'll look at a globe. We'll look online, see where I'm going. Sometimes I don't even know. Like when I went to Vanuatu, I was like, where's that?
Yes.
But I just kind of, it's a string of islands off of Australia.
Okay.
They had to look it up. But
do you get to say no?
I have never said no. I can say no.
Okay.
But yeah, I've never had to. It's always worked out that I could go.
Okay. I'm a nurse too. What is the credentials or whatever that you need to do that? You just need to be, do you have to have ICU experience?
No, not necessarily, because we do all kinds of different things. That's one specialty that we always are looking for, especially when we have a field hospital that we put up, and we had a field hospital right outside of Mosul, Iraq, recently. And so ICU nurses were what we were looking for. But credentially, you just need to have a license that's active, and you need to have done international, some kind of international travel, because they don't want you to go on your first deployment and have that be the first time you've ever been in another culture.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that would be alarming. Another culture is alarming in the best of situations. You know what I mean?
On vacation, another culture is alarming, but yeah. You throw in a disaster and it can be really complicated.
Yes. My goodness. Okay. So let me just, I have so many questions. I don't know if they're good, but I have so many questions. Sometimes, at least my kids, when I tell them that something can't happen, they sometimes are like fine with it, but they're sometimes not actually fine with it. Like, how do you gauge that the cost is not actually too high? Like, they're not just taking one for the team, but they really are fine.
That's a good question. I, as a mom, that mom guilt is so heavy and it is so hard to balance it all. I want to be a good wife. I want to be a good mom. I want to be a good everything. I want to be a good sister and friend and neighbor. It's so hard. So I just, the only thing I know to do, and it's worked as far as I can tell, is keep communication constantly open. So I am always talking to my family and saying, you guys are my priority. If this becomes too much for you, let's have a conversation about that. If you feel neglected or you feel afraid, because when I went to Iraq and when I went to for Ebola, they, you know, that's scary and the potential is there for me. You know, we all know bad things happen to godly people, so whatever, but it's part of the risk. So I think communication, and I say, I'm going to have to miss your 16th birthday. And they're like, they honestly said, that's okay, mom. We'll have other birthdays. They need you more and we'll be okay. And I have to, at some point, I have to, my husband always tells me, you have to take people for their word. If they say they're one thing, but they feel another, and you've given them opportunity, then that's on them. And I know kids are different, but my kids were a little older. We've been doing this since they were 11 and they're almost 20 now. So I suppose when they were younger, it was a little harder on them, but I'm not gone. It sounds like I'm gone every 5 minutes. I deploy maybe the most I've ever gone is 4 times a year. Okay. So the majority of my time is with them and at home with them. And we just keep the communications open. And I think that has really helped.
That's good. So tell me how, when you see people who've literally lost everything and then you come home and see people who think they've quote unquote literally lost everything and you're like, are you kidding me right now? Like, how do you not? I don't know. Tell me what that's been like for you.
Yeah, that's a great question, because that has been a struggle for me, even within my own family. You know, you can't help it when you come home and your kids might complain about what you made for dinner. And I may or may not have on occasion said, well, I'm sure the kids I just saw in the refugee camp would appreciate that meatloaf. I can't help that. And it's not fair. So, but that's an opportunity for me to teach them and bring my stories home. That's been one of the best parts, honestly, is to bring other really big problems home to my family and to talk about them at the table. And it's really helped them to see that sometimes God calls us to use our skills in ways we never thought he would. And it's not always safe and it's not always easy and it's not always comfortable. And being a disaster response nurse is none of those things. It's never comfortable, especially when we don't have running water for a month or...
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, what are those conditions like?
Well, that's tricky, but, earthquake situations and tsunamis are some of the hardest ones because everything's wiped out. Mm-hmm. You don't have any kind of stable environment that you're living in. So, you know, we make it work. We have a great logistics team that deploys with us to make sure that we have what we need. It gets better as the deployment goes, but I'm usually one of the first to go. And so those first couple of days up to a week or two can be, I've slept in a field before. I've slept in an abandoned apartment during a typhoon. I've slept in a tent. You know, we've slept in hammocks.
You're like Jack Bauer.
And I'm not a camper. This is the funniest part of it all. I like me a shower and I like a fan when I sleep and I like some nice smell and body wash. So
yeah, I guess people assume that you're like Jane and Tarzan or something, just loving all that.
Totally, totally not. But I've grown to learn how to do that. I can do a bucket bath like there's no one's business. I've learned that's such a good skill. And I've just learned, I've grown a lot in my faith. I've grown a lot of who I am and what's important to me through this. And my family has grown a lot. And I've seen good things for my kids. I probably would have turned out to be a helicopter mom because we took 4 years to get pregnant. And then we got pregnant through in vitro.
Okay. Yeah.
And I wanted them so badly. And I think I would have been a helicopter mom. So this, me leaving them and having to trust that they were going to survive and brush their teeth properly, has been good for them, and they are a lot more responsible and on top of things, I think, because I do this kind of work.
Okay. So you find that at some point, sometimes when you're like, I don't know, in a field asleep, are you in danger? Is that a dumb question? And of course you're in danger. Are people like trying to steal all the supplies y'all have? I imagine like mobs.
Yeah, and there can be, because when there's a disaster of some kind, and if it's really big, like a big earthquake, like in Haiti, that was huge. People get crazy. They're desperate and they're scared. Yeah. But security is super important to us. We fly in tons of, you know, warehouse full of equipment. So we make sure we have security and those kinds of things. Probably Mosul, Iraq was the most dangerous place because we were 6 miles from the front line of the war when ISIS was fighting against Iraqis to take back Mosul. But we were literally in tents with cement walls around us with security protecting us. So it just depends on what we're there for in the deployment. But we take security, as you know, very seriously, and we do our best to keep us safe.
Do you often feel like you are in fact safe or not really?
Honestly, this is the truth. People ask me this all the time, especially again when we were in ISIS territory and they knew we were there and mortar attacks and the bombs were going off all around us. God gives me peace. Like, yeah. I'm not in denial. When I walk into an Ebola unit, I know it's a very real thing, but God just gives me peace. And I tell my family all the time, I don't know what's going to happen, but it is well with my soul. That's what I always just tell them. And they, you know, we just don't worry. We know I'm in God's hands. And if bad things happen, they know it as well with my soul.
Yeah. Is there lots of crying when you leave?
Really? Yes. Okay. Yes. When I leave my family, I've been doing it for 8 years, like I said, and every single time I get on the plane, I've said goodbye. I'm going for a month, which isn't a lifetime, but it's a long time.
That's a long time.
It's a long time. And sometimes, I mean, that it's not always a month, but most of the time it's a month. But at the very least, it'll be 3 weeks. And I cry every time.
Is it because you know you're about to sleep in a field? Because that would be why I was crying.
Well, that's a little part of it. Sometimes you go and I leave so quickly and the disaster, whatever it is, has just happened. So I don't know a lot of information. I flew into Iraq by myself. I got there at 1 o'clock in the morning and I just know someone's going to pick me up, but I don't know who, I don't know where I'm going to stay. People are on the other side working all that out, but I don't ever know. So, and I don't know what's this month going to be like. There's a lot of emotions, but missing my family and saying goodbye to them and my dog, who I love my dog, but saying goodbye to them is very hard. And I try to keep in touch while I'm gone.
Oh, there's a way to do that?
Sometimes, if it's a huge disaster, there might not even be cell towers, but we have satellite phones, things like that, that I can send them just a quick text to say, I'm fine, I'm doing okay. But after about a week or two, I can usually text on my phone. I have the international plan on my phone. And so I can Skype or text with my family during the day. And that helps me keep in touch with them and to know the day to day of what they're doing.
Okay, that's good.
I want to say a special thank you to one of today's podcast sponsors, Daily Harvest. So I'm sick and I'm recording this in a very hot closet with no ventilation. When you're hot and you're sick and you'd rather just be in bed, Daily Harvest is exactly what you need. They have a chocolate avocado smoothie that is amazing and it's calling my name. I might get up and get one here in a minute. Daily Harvest, if you don't know, delivers perfectly portioned cups of frozen organic fruits and vegetables, and they come right to your door. Then you put them in the freezer, and so you don't have to worry about anything going bad. You just pull them out when you need them. It's the perfect thing to have on hand for those days you don't feel like cooking, or you don't have time for cooking, or it's too stinking hot to cook. I love to tell the kids to get ready to go swimming, and by the time they're done getting ready, I'm ready and I have a smoothie and we're walking to the pool and I couldn't be happier. They also have iced lattes, which are fantastic. So go to daily-harvest.com and enter promo code MSW to get 3 cups for free in your first box. That's promo code MSW for 3 free Daily Harvest cups at daily-harvest.com. That's daily-harvest.com. So our hair as women is a big deal to us. I actually just cut all my hair off. I'm a little weirded out about it, but I wanted to tell you about a supplement that let me tell you, I say no to a lot of products to be sponsors on the show because if I don't feel like it's a good fit or something I would take myself. But when I saw what was in this product, I knew I could get behind it. So for women, stress plays a huge role in our hair thinning, and all the stuff that we're juggling in our daily lives can elevate our stress hormones, and those are not actually good for our hair's health. If we lose sleep because of stress, that affects our thyroid. Our thyroid regulates our metabolism, so proper thyroid function is really essential for hair health. Nutrafol contains thyroid supportive components like iodine, selenium, and zinc, things like that. So I really believe this product could be great for you if you're concerned about your hair health. And I love that it'll help you in a lot of other ways as well. So if you subscribe to Nutrafol, you'll get your first month for $10. Visit NutraFol.com and use the code MSW during checkout. So again, when you subscribe, you get your first month for $10 by visiting NutraFol.com and use coupon code MSW during checkout.
Hey, since you're listening to this right now, you know your phone is by you. Go ahead and snap a picture, post it on Instagram or Facebook, tag me in it, and let me know what you're doing while you listen to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. I am always sharing my life with y'all. It's time for you to do the same. Did you like that guilt trip? I was trying to lay it on pretty thick. But really, I would love to see what you're up to when you listen to the show. So snap that selfie and tag Mom Struggling Well. Okay, so all the disasters are different, all the reasons you're there, all the places you are, it's all different. Do you find that kind of like there's a similar feel to all of them, or are they all wildly different experiences?
They're 90% wildly different. Even one earthquake, you would think the next one, wherever that is, would be the same, but they're just different. One tsunami in one place is totally different than another based on the culture and all kinds of things.
Okay.
So they're all different. They do have a common thread that they're always chaotic and always crazy and always busy. You usually work 15, 17 hour days, and you can always expect at least that. And there will be no day off during your whole 30 days typically. So you just know that, and you just go into it armed and ready.
Do you end up, I'm just assuming this is silly, but do you lose a lot of weight?
Yes, I love it.
Because I would imagine like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I've my usual 6 to 10 pounds typically. So that's my justification for when I get home staying 10 pounds over. I'm like, well, I wouldn't want to be a little skinny waif, because if I got on a deployment and I lost 10 more pounds, then
you're just
what
planning
good would
ahead.
I be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. So do you end up eating like granola bars from home or the local food?
In the beginning, so that's one of the first things I do when I find out I'm leaving. I run to the store and grab, because depending again on the deployment, when I was in Dominica, which is a Caribbean island, after Hurricane Maria, the whole island was wiped out. So there were no markets, nothing. Mm-hmm. So we had what we had for that first week. And then after that, we had cup of noodles literally for the month. But yeah, I usually bring granola bars. Then we'll find the local food and kind of hire. Sometimes we hire cooks to kind of cook us beans and rice. It just depends.
Okay.
MREs. We eat MREs a lot.
Yeah. Okay. And say what that is for people who don't know.
It's like a military meals ready to eat. They come in a pouch and they have, you know, simple things.
Just like heat them up or.
Yeah. Just heat them up or eat them cold, which they're not the greatest, but they're good. You know, you just do what you have to do.
I remember when I was little, like freeze-dried ice cream, like astronaut ice cream or something.
Yeah. 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 Usually they have, you know, they have high calories because they're for the military. So they usually have peanut butter and beans and rice and trail mixy types of things.
Okay. Tell me about relationships with the people that you are serving alongside.
Oh, such a good question. That's another thing I love so much. So wherever we go, whatever country we're in, we always work with the national people. We hire them to be our translators, our drivers, our data people, whatever, depends on what we're there for. We always work alongside them. For example, in Bangladesh, it's a Muslim country. And so we had a lot of Muslim workers that worked with us, and it is a total partnership. Mm-hmm. They know we're Christians. We don't force it down their throat, but we just live it out in front of them every day and have life like we live life together. Mm-hmm. And we have formed, I am still very good friends with all lots of people I've met in the 8 years in all different countries, because you're doing life and you're there to help their people, and that speaks to them, and they want to know, why would you come all this way? Leave your comfy. They know we're from the United States. They know we have a cushy life compared to them. Mm-hmm. Why would you leave your family at Christmas? Why would you come? And that's a great opportunity to share about the Good Samaritan, about loving your neighbor, and about why we serve Jesus and love people and help them.
Yeah. I can imagine that all the baloney that goes on in our lives and our relationships that are over nothing really is kind of gone in those type of relationships with even the other foreigners or Americans that you are bringing in with you and working alongside. I mean, you're the foreigner, right? That's what I meant.
Yeah.
So I think, are those relationships kind of cleaner? I don't know. It just feels like everybody understands what's really important. Would you say that's...
That's exactly right. I mean, we're there for one job and one job only. Whatever baggage you may have brought, whatever's going on at home, there's nothing you can do about that right now. So we are busy. We have a job to do and we're a team and we all work together. Kind of you're on the one cause focused. You just live, eat, and breathe whatever disaster you're on because that's all you have the energy and capacity to do. And a lot of times, because it is a disaster, some are worse than others. Ebola, the first month that I was there, every single patient but two died. Every single one, Emily, and you know, as a nurse, as a nurse, you want to save people, but that's how hard Ebola is. So when you're with a team member, you're in it, like you're in the trenches together, and it really bonds you together like nothing else.
Do you have people who get there and just say, nope, this is not for me, and you have to send them home?
We have had to send people home. Iraq was a really hard deployment, and we saw a lot of trauma, a lot of blown up people and blown up children. It was very traumatic. And we had some people, I mean, nobody can react to that properly.
Yeah.
But we had some people who weren't handling that well. They always know before they go what they're getting into. Yeah. I mean, generally speaking. So we try to screen ahead of time.
It's very different in theory, though, right?
It is so different in theory.
So are there counselors and mental health people that are there with you guys as well?
No, not specifically, but we do have our Samaritan's Purse has a care team. And if it's a really hard deployment like Ebola, like Iraq, they'll deploy people with us like chaplains and others that we can debrief with. Yeah. And then when we come home, they always make that available to us.
I was going to say, all right, so you come home from Ebola. Everybody died mostly. How on earth do you do your Tuesday morning?
Well, when I came home, then I have to go into 21 days of isolation because of Ebola. So that was another, I know that was another component that was wonky with
Ebola. Where did you do that?
I went twice. And so I did both just at home. They offered for me to go to a hotel, but I pretty much stayed secluded. You know, you're not contagious unless you're sick with a fever. But if I should get one, that was the problem. So for 21 days, I just had to take my temperature four times a day or whatever it was, I think every 4 hours and report that. And then if I got sick, then I would have to, you know, this big procedure that would have to happen. So I just laid low in my house because that was during the time when America was freaking out about Ebola. And so my community knew I was gone. My church knew I was gone.
Oh, okay. Nobody wanted to see you anyway.
Right. Nobody wanted to see me anyway. So
yeah, that was happening, at least some of it in Dallas. So I remember.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Where do you live? Michigan?
I live in, Michigan.
Okay. So how do you care for your brain after seeing all the things you're seeing in your heart? What does that look like?
That's a great question. A lot of it is what you do before a deployment. So It's important to me to be able to, like, I never thought that this was going to be a new passion for me. I thought it was a one trip thing that God was going to send me on and I'd come back to my cushy life. But I loved it and they just kept calling and more disasters kept happening and here I am. So I know this is a long haul marathon if I want to keep doing this work. So a lot of things I do before I get a call, since I never know when a call is going to come, like staying in my Bible, reading God's word, praying all the time. I read a lot of books about walking with God through pain and suffering, hard things, how to communicate, how to be a leader, all those kinds of things I do before I go, which really help me cope when I'm there. When I'm there in a deployment, I have some coping mechanisms. You know, you're very busy. You have very little privacy. You're exhausted. But if every night I can listen to some music that I've preloaded, that Christian music, that kind of helps me focus on that. Yeah. Just a little, maybe I take my book and try to read one chapter, try to read one verse of a Bible. something just to cope. And I sort of stuff the feelings while I'm on a deployment. So if I'm seeing a bunch of people dying, children blown up with their legs and arms literally blown off, I stuff that because I have a job to do. There's no time to be breaking down. And then on the plane ride home, I start to dig it out and I start to process. And then when I get home, I begin the hard work of processing. Some are quicker to get over, some are take longer. Iraq took me several months to get over, but I just try to talk to my pastor. He debriefs me when I get home. I love to exercise. I just get back to what I know to do. Mm-hmm. And God has always walked with me through it.
Ladies, let's talk about underwear here for a second. We all have to wear it. I mean, I suppose we don't have to wear it, but most of us wear it. And I want to tell you, Tommy John's underwear is so comfortable. In fact, their new women's underwear line sold out in 6 weeks because everybody loved it so much. Well, it's now back in stock. They not only have underwear in some really great colors, lots of different cuts, they have camisoles that are so soft. Doesn't even feel like you're wearing one. And they also have loungewear, which I have not tried myself, but if it's anything like the underwear and camisoles, I'm going to need to have some of those in my life. Tommy John obsesses over every little detail. Their stitching is done on purpose. The fabric they use are so soft, really light, moisture wicking, breathable. It's just a really quality product. Tommy John is so confident in their underwear that if you don't love your first pair, you can get a full refund with their best pair you'll ever wear or it's free guarantee. So hurry to TommyJohn.com/MSW and you're going to get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/MSW for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/MSW.
Do you find sometimes as things go on, they get easier because you kind of know the rhythm, but sometimes when things go on, they can compound and be worse than they were because of, I mean, sometimes it's if you're not dealing with things that have happened. Do you find that it is easier because you kind of know your rhythm? It kind of sounds like you do.
Yeah, it took me a while. It wasn't anything I knew how to do. I just learned through trial and error along the way. But now, yes, you're right. I've learned my rhythm. I know what works for me. I also do training. I'm actually a trainer for, you know, for disaster. So I can use that and help them who are on the front end of it learn the things that have helped me that I wish I would have known kind of going into it early on. But I'm not too surprised anymore. I know what to do when I get home. I know to lay low and rest and kind of I want to plug back in with my family and hear what they've been doing. Yeah. So I've kind of taught them. We always tell people, teach your family how to welcome you back because okay. The minute I walk in the door, it's just hard. I'm tired and I'm emotional and I haven't yet processed. So I don't want, so what'd you see? What kind of patients did you have? You know, so they kind of know when mom starts bringing out her stories, that's when you can start asking questions. Until then, it's just, hey, I missed you. What have you guys been up to? Tell me what you've been doing.
Gosh, that's amazing. So your plan is to keep doing this. I mean, I guess if you're a trainer now.
Yeah, that's my plan. I love this work.
And so you don't work other than this?
Well, I did for a long time, but it's very hard to say, hey, I'm leaving in 4 hours for a month. Can you cover my shift? So I just knew that, you know, was frowned upon. It's hard. And I don't want to be that employee that's flaky, of course, even though they knew what I was going for. Yeah. So I pretty much retired my job here. I work on staff at my church part time and they're very flexible and they knew going into it that this is what I do. So, yeah.
Wow. That's fascinating. For a mom who is working, I think a lot of moms feel bad. Like you were talking about mom guilt. We feel bad if we're at work, that we're not at home. And sometimes when we're at home, we're like, oh my gosh, I feel so bad that I'm not at work. You know, it's just kind of goes all the ways. But what would you say to a mom who's feeling guilty for doing something outside the home? I mean, it's one thing if you don't have a choice and you have to do this to provide for your family. But for the mom who's like, no, I really... this is amazing. My family's on board, but maybe she feels like she's getting the side eye from other people who think that she shouldn't do something.
The side eye is a killer, isn't it?
It is.
Trust me, I get the side eye often from people who kind of don't get this work. Why would you? You're a mom. You're a wife. You have responsibility to your family. Why? And they mean well, but they don't get it. They're like, why would you put yourself into dangerous situations? I try to educate and say, other people, that's a disaster. They need help. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to go. So I just can't worry about what other people say. My family and my close friends know my heart. They know my love and my priorities for Jesus and my family and my husband. They know my passion for this work. They may not understand it all the time. They may not choose to do it, but I just have to let go what everybody else says who kind of isn't in the close network of my life, because you can't please everyone, and nobody knows the inner conversations that you're having with your husband and kids, you know, at the dinner table about your life and how it's impacting your family.
Yeah, that's really good. I love it. Okay, so your relationship with God. I know you've seen a lot of really hard things, and some people let that be, God must not be good, or these things wouldn't happen. Where are you with that? And how does that, even if you totally have a lot of faith and you know, like, God is good no matter what, what do those conversations look like with God when you're seeing blown up kids?
You, again, have to really get your theology of suffering in your head figured out before you do this kind of work, which means not what does everybody else say about why bad things happen, but what does God say? Mm. Why do these things happen? You have to be in your Bible and figure out what the sovereignty of God and good versus evil and how it was meant to be and how we jacked it up through sin.
Yeah.
And what God's word says about when bad things happen, like in Job and other places. So in my 8 years, and I've seen some really bad things and some really hard things, I can honestly tell you, and this doesn't make me super Christian, this is just the truth, I have never once gotten angry at God and said, why God, why? Now I'll get mad at the situation and go, why stupid ISIS? Why do you blow people up? Why? But I know that I know that I know that God is good, and God is so brokenhearted over this situation and seeing children blown up, and he loves them. His word says he loves them so much, and this is not how it was supposed to be, and this is not the end of the story. Yeah. And someday all things will be made new. And I just remember all those things. And I go to him sobbing. You know, there were days that we broke down when we would see 28 kids come in all at once, blown up to shreds. And we would sob and, you know, just pray and say, God, give us your perspective on this and help us to remember that you are sovereign and you are in control. And then at the end of the day, my honest answer is, I have no idea why these things happen, God's plan. I just know what his word says. I can't make sense of it, so I'm not going to try. And I'm just going to trust him. He is trustworthy, and he has proven himself trustworthy to me.
That's so good. Do you have, like, PTSD? Do you have nightmares? Like, what does that look like?
No, I don't. After Iraq, I would say that was next to Ebola. I never thought I'd do anything harder than Ebola. And then we went to Iraq, and that was, I don't know, different, but right up there with the things that we saw, just so many children, so many amputations, so many deaths. And I did come home from that. My soul hurt badly. And it took, whereas most deployments, good 2-3 weeks, I'm back to normal again. But that one really beat me up badly, and I knew it, but I wasn't mad at God, but I knew my soul was deeply hurt.
Yeah.
I had a lot of memories, and I wouldn't say I woke up in sweats, like PTSD kind of thing, but I did loud sounds, loud bombing type sounds that made me think back of that. Certain songs, a certain smell, bleach still to this day, because we used it a lot for Ebola, makes me automatically go right back there. But I'm really in a good place with it.
Okay. So you think that the good of it outweighs the kind of things that linger for you?
Yes. And part of this work is trusting God with the consequences of my obedience. I really feel I prayed for a whole year, God, use me how you want to use me. And this is how he chose to use me. Yeah. So I trust him with the consequences of me following him. And he has always walked me through it. I knew I needed a little extra help, and so I got it. I worked hard over the summer coming back from Iraq on looking up verses in the Bible about the soul, because I felt like my soul was deeply damaged. Mm-hmm. And that really helped heal me. And shortly thereafter, I was ready to go back to Bangladesh and the Caribbean. So I just trust God that he'll get me through it and I'll get the help that I need if I face something that I can't quite get over.
Man, that's some big stuff right there. Kelly, thank you for sharing that story.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay. So at the end of the show, I like to ask some questions because sometimes things get really heavy and I don't want to end there. So I'm going to ask you some questions and I want you to kind of answer them as quickly as you can. And you do not know these questions.
Okay. It's really going to be that way then.
Yes, it really is. Okay. So what is the grossest thing you've ever eaten in your life?
I ate caterpillars in Thailand.
Okay. On purpose, you had to? Was it a survival thing or for fun?
It was a survival thing, and it was also a little bit for fun, and I'm not a gross food eater, but I had to do it. So, and they were alive, might I mention. They were alive.
Okay, so they, so you had a choice? Did you have to pick them up out of the...
Yes.
Well, you literally harvested your own caterpillars?
They're a delicacy over there. They eat crazy things. And so it's something that you find in the markets. And so they had pig intestines and all kinds of gross things. And to me, the caterpillar was the least grossest out of all of my choices.
Which what did that something. Taste like? Yeah, really?
I don't remember because I pretended like I was chewing it, but I literally swallowed it whole. So I wouldn't have to taste the oozing out of the caterpillar.
Okay, yeah. I agree with that. That sounds so gross. Okay. All right. What is something that you don't like for no reason? Like my example is I hate LOL. I don't know why. I am so fundamentally against it.
I hate lightning round. Pressure, pressure, pressure. This is causing me post-traumatic stress right now. No. I hate for no reason when my kids say they're bored.
No kidding. Oh my God.
I don't like that. Or when any kids say they're bored. Because I'm like, really? The kids I saw in Africa have a pop can to play with. You're not bored.
No kidding. I know. Gosh. Okay. I agree. I hate that. They know they can't say the B word in this house unless they want to pick up dog poop or something. So I got work to help you not be bored.
Yes. The car needs washed. Go do it.
Yeah. Okay. So what is your best less is more example?
Less is more. Oh. Less is more with clutter, like things around the house. It makes me whiz through my house and clean it fast because I don't have a bunch of stuff sitting all over the place.
Yes.
Things to dust and pick up and move and just clutter. I like to keep it simple.
So good. Yeah. I'm anti knickknacks because of that same reason.
Oh, I hate knickknacks.
The rest of my family is very pro knickknack. I don't understand. And I'm the one who has to dust them. So it's a struggle.
And I'm anti-collecting things. We don't have collections of things.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay. I like it. All right. If you could instantly know another language, which one would you choose and why?
Either French or Spanish, because that tends to be languages that other countries I go to often speak. So I know how to say, take this pill 3 times a day in about 10 languages, but that's all I know. So it would be super helpful.
Yes. To know a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
All right. And then finally, what is something that you cannot stop talking about right now?
Well, honest answer, I love podcasts. I'm always talking about podcasts because it's the way I unwind. I go work out and I listen to podcasts while I'm working out.
Yeah,
because
what
then
do you
it
love?
Doesn't feel. I love, in terms of podcasts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love yours. I listen to yours all the time. I listen to Jamie Ivey Happy Hour.
Yes.
I listen to the Popcast.
Love Knox and Jamie.
Oh, my goodness. It depends on my mood. If I need a good laugh, I'll definitely listen to the Popcast.
Yes.
Then I have some crazy ones like Serial and Dirty John, some crime ones that I really am obsessed with.
Oh, I haven't looked at, I don't know about Dirty John.
Yeah, I think the Popcast, I think, told me about that one. So
probably.
That's depends on my mood when I'm in the mood for a crime thing.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I'll have to check that out.
I love that.
Yay. Well, Kelly, thank you. Thank you again. Really appreciate all of this. Wasn't that great? So what will your strategy be to struggle well based on what Kelly said? Maybe you are a brand new twin mom and you just need to get those jokers on the same schedule. I have no idea. I only did one at a time, but it seems smart. Maybe like Kelly, you want to spend some time communicating with your kids about your obligations outside of the home. You probably don't go to war zones, but maybe it would help your mom guilt be less severe if you could maybe hear from them that they really are fine when you go to do whatever it is that you do. Or maybe they really aren't and you can cut back. You aren't going to know unless you have the conversation about it.
I loved what she said about self-care after trauma begins before the trauma. None of us know what is around the corner. Hopefully it is not terrible. We hope we're not sleeping in a field, but we don't know. And even if it's not a natural disaster, it could be a relational disaster or a health disaster. So maybe this week you do some pre-trauma self-care. You get in the word, you take care of yourself, you build some spiritual disciplines that are going to be life-giving to your soul. The Bible tells us to be ready in season and out of season to give an account for the hope that we have. If you're not in the middle of a trial, you're fixing to get in one, so you might as well get ready. Yes? Maybe you are someone who really struggles with the fact that there is so much suffering in the world, and how in the world can God be good when there's so much bad happening? Head to the show notes at strugglewellproject.com for this episode, and I put a lot of resources from really solid authors and pastors and ministries on there about suffering. Maybe your strategy to struggle well is that you want to be a disaster relief nurse too. So see if that'll work for your family. My husband's still a pretty hard no about that. So I think I'll be doing this podcast and not sleeping in abandoned apartments. But it really sounds amazing. Maybe when my kids are older. All right, friends, if this chat impacted you, do me a favor and hit the share button. Let's get this episode into the earbuds of the people in your life who need it. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast, because next week I'm bringing you a talk with Jessica Honegger, the girl who started Noonday. We talk about how Noonday started. It is not as glamorous as you might think. The impact Noonday is having around the world. And we just talk about a lot of other fun stuff too. You're going to love it. Jessica Honegger is really awesome. All right, now let's bring back my sister to discuss an item that one of you amazing people purchased on Amazon using the show's affiliate link. That link, by the way, is amazon.com/shop/strugglewellproject. It's a simple and completely free way for you to help out your favorite podcast.
So what'd you find on Amazon this week?
All right. Well, I was looking and I saw that someone used the affiliate link to buy this really cute watercolor pillow. It's ombre, like a teal.
Okay, cute.
So cute. That's all I have to say. It's just really cute. They have really good taste. Way to go.
You know what? That was the first link I clicked on too. I was looking through there. I was like, what? Ombre pillow. That's cute. I had the same exact thought.
There you go. Yeah. Way to go, having good taste.
We're coming to your house. We want to see that pillow in action.
All right, ladies, let me pray for us. Lord, I acknowledge that my brain is too small to understand how you can both be good, 100% good, and let absolutely horrific things happen to your children. It feels just too heavy for me to understand. Lord, I pray for my sisters who are listening, who are in a place where it's not just something they don't understand. It's something that they're mad about. It's something that they're broken and smashed to pieces about. God, what I do know for sure is you're big enough to deal with our questions. You are not afraid of our frustration at the situations, but that your heart towards us is you want us to engage with you on these very uncomfortable topics, such as the suffering in the world. God, I pray for my friends who are traumatized and who have walked through brokenness that you never intended for us to walk through when you created us. What I do know about you is that you are the God who restores, and what's not restored in this broken world will be restored at the end. I pray for these suffering sisters who are listening. God, would you give them a vision of who you are, who you see that they are, and where you intend to take them. God, this week, regardless of where we're at, if we're hurting, if we just came out of a season of hurting, or if we're about to go in one and we don't even know it, God, would you lift up our faces and continue to help us to fix our eyes on you, because you are where our help comes from. In Jesus' name, amen.